I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, we sit down with two state legislators who have decided not to seek re-election. Later in the hour, State Representative Cleon Turner joins us. But first, Senate President Therese Murray, who was first elected to the state Senate in 1992, representing the Plymouth and Barnstable District. She became the first woman to lead a House of the Massachusetts General Court when she was elected Senate President in 2007. Earlier this year, she announced this would be her last term. Welcome back to the program.
Oh, happy to be here.
All right. So I'm sure a lot went into this decision not to run again.
I could continue to run, but the Senate presidency has a term limit of 8 years, which I think is a healthy term limit. You can amass a lot of power in that position, and so I think it's time to give that up and give it to somebody else and move ahead to the next chapter of my life.
And have you decided what that next chapter is?
I think it's going to be a lot of things. People have been encouraging me to go into a number of different areas. My passion is life science and connected health and technology, internationally and nationally. But I'm also very much contemplating and talking to people about writing a book about my experiences in both the pre-legislature and certainly within the legislature, because while I'm the first woman president of the Massachusetts Senate or any body, mm-hmm. legislative body, I've also been the first woman in a lot of places, and I've got some pretty good stories.
Yeah, I would read that.
They could send a lot of people running.
Yeah, that's funny. All right, so lots to do over the next several months. But before we get to what you're doing now, let's look back on some of your major accomplishments. And there are many: welfare reform, DSS overhaul, consolidation of child care services, mental health parity legislation, a catastrophic illness and children relief fund, proposing smart growth, affordable housing, Chapter 70 education funding reform, healthcare cost control bill in 2008. Goes on and on. And then when you became Senate President, you co-authored and passed legislation to restructure the state transportation system, oversaw a comprehensive string of reforms, including improvements in the state pension system, our ethics lobby and campaign finance laws, on and on and on. So when you look back on this, what do you see as some of your major accomplishments? What are you most proud of?
Well, obviously, The healthcare piece, giving healthcare to everyone is extremely important. Massachusetts led the way, and we were used as the model, obviously, for the federal Affordable Care Act. I wish they had actually used all of our model. I think it would have gone a lot more smoothly because we had people covered pretty quickly, and almost everyone covered pretty quickly at a reasonable amount of money. So we're thrilled that the federal government is paying, obviously, for 50% of our Medicaid dollars and picking up more in other areas. But the cuts in Medicare have an impact to every community and all any individual who was hit that age. And the discussion with doctors should really be at the table practitioners, not just doctors, should be at the table and helping to make some of these decisions that are ongoing. Because when you make a decision at the federal level that you're only going to pay the docs, you know, a percentage of their costs, it's fine. You know, you want to take out fraud and weed out people who are abusing the system. But as our population ages, you're going to need more Medicare dollars, and you're going to need more docs, primary care doctors, going into geriatric care. And you need to pay them. And we really need to pay our primary care doctors more.
Yeah, and that might be why we have this issue with a lack of primary care physicians. With, you know, if you have young people going, do I really want to do that?
Well, it's much more 24/7 than cosmetology, dermatology. I mean, not cosmetology, dermatology, oncology. You know, it's you have to do nights. You have to answer calls. So moving to the new model of healthcare will help that. Moving towards more nurse practitioners and physicians' assistants being able to do more is going to help access the mini clinics at drugstores or pharmacies, is going to help the access issue. The critical care places and the urgent care centers now, so you don't have to go to the ER and, you know, run up lots of costs. You can go to these urgent care centers, and more people, once they get used to that, that's where they're going to go, and the costs will come down eventually, and hopefully we'll be able to cover more. But I do wish the federal government would give us a waiver for our small businesses, which we did here under our Health Care Act.
We're talking with Senate President Therese Murray. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Still several months left before the end of the term. So what are your priorities?
Well, the Senate passed a comprehensive substance abuse bill. Given the crisis that we have in the Commonwealth, it's really across the country, but we have a significant heroin problem and opiate addiction problem here. We just lost, in my own town of Plymouth, another young woman. She used to be head of the cheerleaders at Plymouth North High School, you know, died of a heroin overdose. And this is getting to be on a regular basis. At the same time she died, another young woman 2 years younger than her was revived with Narcan. It's just epidemic. So I'm hoping that the House will take that bill up and we can get it to conference before the end of July and on the governor's desk so that he can sign that we can put these additional beds and programs and step-down units and more comprehensive care for addicts and identify that this is a chronic disease. Addiction is chronic disease, and let's treat it as such. Then we have an economic development bill. The House will be doing theirs in the next few weeks. We are working on our own, and it will be comprehensive. This will be the third economic development bill I've done since I've been in the Senate president, and I'm excited about doing that. And, of course, the Senate passed a water infrastructure bill months ago that the House has yet to take up, so I'm hoping that they will move on that, too. So we have a lot of things on our plate. The House is taking up a gun bill, I think, next week or the week after. They had the hearing yesterday. It was a little contentious, but... You know, we suspected that, and we hope to take that up, too.
Yeah. Since you mentioned water infrastructure, that's, of course, a huge issue mm-hmm. here on the Cape, and it's something we've been talking about for a long time.
Yeah, well, we have these courts looking over our shoulder down here, and more than the courts doing it, it has to be for the future of the Cape. You know, we have a water supply that is limited, and we have a very sandy soil. So, when, you know, we used to say your well was right next to, you know, mm-hmm. you know what I'm getting yeah. at there. So it's really imperative that we address the problem because our estuaries and bays are being clogged with nitrogen, and the rivers are dying, and they supply, you know, the ecosystem is off balance. So we have to address the problem, and there is a concern. Should it be regional MWRA? No one in the Cape wants that, and I get that, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But each town doing it separately when they share the same water, it might be difficult. So I'm hoping that and Falmouth's done a great job, by the way. Falmouth is ahead of the curve there, but I'm hoping that this bill will pass and that the Cape will get some resources and that we can actually come up with some regional systems. One size shouldn't fit all. Some towns are ahead of others and some towns don't have the same issues, but we all share the common the Commonwealth.
Yeah, it's a tough issue too because of course the cost factor, you know, is huge and people go, "Why?" You know, you've got people living on fixed incomes who maybe don't have enough money, and I guess these, you know, zero interest loans are a good idea, but yeah, it's, and like you say, one there isn't one solution, and people have a lot of misinformation, I think. You know, I hear people saying we're going to sewer the whole Cape, and nobody's saying that.
And the better you don't want to put betterment charges on people on fixed incomes who've retired into the homes that maybe have been there. Second home, so or we're in their first homes. Now they've got these new flood maps right. that are going to make their insurance go up. We have the wind charges, yeah. The hurricane charges. So and now we're going to add something else. We're going to add a betterment fee for sewers. I don't think that anyone wants to do that.
Right. All right. So let's talk about your election as the first female leader in the general court. Does that signal a new era, do you think, in the legislature for women?
I hope so. I would very much like to see other women follow in leadership positions. There has never been a woman in the top leadership position in the House. And it's really time that women were moved up. I've tried to mentor the women in the Senate, as well as the men, by the way. And I'm hoping that the person who obviously is going to follow me is Senator Stanley Rosenberg from Northampton. He got the votes to do that, and the transition will be smooth because people don't like change all that much. It bothers them, so they'll pretty much know where they're going to be in the next session. So I think that's helpful. But I'd very much like to see more women run for office. We bring a different conversation to the table, and we bring different ways of doing things to the table that I think are helpful.
Yeah. I remember back 2007 when you were elected and thinking, wow, Massachusetts, 2007, it took us that long to elect a woman to a leadership position, and we think of ourselves as such a progressive state.
Well, I'm only the 16th woman ever elected to the Massachusetts Senate.
It's crazy.
And that was in 1992, took my seat in 93. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So what would you say is the most frustrating part of your job as Senate president?
Sometimes it's, they say, herding cats. You know, we'll start off with an idea where everybody is on board on a certain issue. And by the time you're finished and having discussions, there are 10 different views and you're not going to move forward. So you have to put it aside for a while. But that's democracy, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to have a caucus with all of the senators. We usually, the Democrats caucus, the Republicans caucus. But under my leadership, we've done a number of joint caucuses, and we'll have one tomorrow. Not something we're going to be taking up, but something actually talking to people about how the Affordable Care Act and how the Massachusetts health care bills that we've passed have changed the way health care is delivered. A lot of concerns from the members on how this affects their community hospitals. As you see more and more mergers go through, they're concerned about losing, their own local hospitals and healthcare operations. So it's probably going to be a very long discussion, but everyone will be involved and everyone will get the same information so mm-hmm. that they can be better informed as this new healthcare law gets
right.
implemented.
Right. So other than herding cats, that's the only frustration you have?
Well, I'm a very impatient person. So if I see something that needs to be done, I'd like to do it. And the democratic process is very slow.
Slow, yeah.
First you have to file the bill, then it has to be admitted, then it has to go through the hearing process, and then it has to go to each branch to be voted on, if you can get it to the branch. And then, of course, there are many changes to that along the way, which is good. Sometimes things are made much better. It takes a long time.
All right. So what about the most enjoyable part of being Senate president?
Getting to do things that really impact people's lives. And I've been lucky and I've been blessed to have been able to do that, whether it's the health care law we passed, the Catastrophic Children's Fund I put together, the newborn hearing testing, which, the insurance companies and really fought us on, but Representative Christine Canavan and I did it when we were sophomores. She was in the House, me in the Senate, so that no child leaves the hospital today until they have a hearing test. It's really the cost of it has been outweighed by the fact that developmental disabilities are caught earlier, much earlier than they used to be. So children who have hearing problems don't get back in school. It's just been an amazing opportunity. And, of course, the Catastrophic Children's Fund, no family will ever have to bankrupt themselves if their child has a serious illness.
That's always been a big focus of yours is children. I remember back in the 90s, kids in foster care and kids, kids of who have all kinds of challenges. You've always had a focus in that area. Is that something you thought of when you first ran for Senate, that was an area you wanted to focus on, or did that just kind of come?
I think it's natural for me. I grew up in a big family of all girls. I had a brother who died of SIDS as a baby. We had a neighbor across the street who was what they would have called retarded at the time. But we didn't even know she lived there until we were like 12 or 13 years old because they kept her inside mm-hmm. until her mother got sick. And we said, why would you keep this child inside? Myself, I have a very mild form of cerebral palsy that people don't know about, which is why I'm so clumsy all the time. So I think it's just a natural. And I have a very high sense of fairness and equity. And when I see something that's not fair, it really bothers me.
Yeah. We're talking with Senate President Therese Murray. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Senate President Therese Murray. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So how do you think the region has changed in your tenure?
Wow. Well, I used to, when I was first elected, I represented different towns in more west of Plymouth and picked up more of the Cape when they did redistricting, I think two years after I was first elected. Then I picked up part of Falmouth, and then I got all of Falmouth. So the region, the demographic region has changed. We have a lot more people who have moved down or into their second homes and retired. We have a lot of younger people, so we've had to build more schools in some areas and give away schools in right. other areas. The issues that have changed are we used to be a lot more parochial. I think with the advent of smartphones and tweets and Facebook and instant gratification of information that you need, it's changed the way we all live. Mm-hmm. And that's changed our town. But we have such great towns, both in the Cape and in Plymouth County and in the whole Commonwealth, and a great sense of community, I think, that people come together and help. And that has changed. People become far less insular and more outward.
Yeah. And you've had to, I mean, not just you, but everybody's had to come up to speed on the changing technology, you know, like with the Facebook page and how your constituents, you know, interact with you. I imagine you get a lot more of that than you do people showing up at your, you know, district offices.
Well, people still do walk in the district office, but we get a lot of volume down there at Cordage Park. But far more, email, or post on the Facebook page. The staff does that. They don't let me touch that. They don't want me to respond the way I would immediately respond.
Getting back to that patience thing, right?
Right, exactly.
All right, so how about the legislature itself? How has that changed in your time?
It's had a huge turnover. The Senate is almost all new and will be when I leave and Senator Brewer leaves. Senator Rosenberg will be the longest serving member, and Senator Hedlund, I think. Other than that, the turnover has been pretty significant. That's never happened before. People have stayed for years and years and years, and that's not the case. A lot of our younger families have to leave because they just can't afford it. If they have children, two, three, four children, like Jack Hart did, and wants to send them to college, and they were in a private parochial school, he had to go even though his wife worked full time too.
Yeah.
And that's been the case of a lot of members in the House also.
All right. Let's talk about you. You've got a busy fall coming up. You're going to Ireland to get an award.
I am. The Irish government is giving me. I'm the third person to received the Tip O'Neill Award, which is very exciting for me, in Donegal in September. My family and friends are coming, and we're going to add it to the delegate to the trade mission that we have been doing over there for the past 5 years. And it's for my work in connected health and the cross-border initiatives between in the northwest of Ireland. And I'm very proud of it and very excited to go also.
Yeah, I bet. And don't you have a connected health conference
here? We have the third EU-US, European-US connected health conference that will be held the week of October 21st here in Boston. Our part of it will be at the State House. There'll be 40,000 people coming into the Boston area that entire week because Partners Healthcare has their Connected Health Conference. We will have this third one. We're the only ones to ever host this in the United States. And last time we had 26 countries.
Wow.
We expect to have more. We'll be doing business-to-business meetings and connecting our businesses with European businesses, because under an agreement that was signed 3 years ago, if they partner together, they can get grants here, and our companies can get grants from the European Union. So it's been very successful. And there'll be, at the same time at the convention center, 20,000 neurologists and bioengineers at conferences. So it's going to be a huge week for Massachusetts in October.
Yeah. So when you're done and you're figuring out what you're going to do next, one of the things I think a lot of people don't know about is that you usually visit Russia. You've been doing this for years. And this was something that Senator Rosenberg,
yes,
and Senator Montigny got you to do, right?
Montigny.
Who was the other one? There was
Senator Pacheco has come on a couple of,
okay,
on a number of our trips.
Right. But it was Senator, they said, oh, come with us. And you visited an orphanage there. And
I went with Senator Rosenberg and Representative Representative from his area, And we was sent by USAID to work with the Russian states, the oblasts, on they were putting together their local legislatures and the difference between federal, state, and local legislation. And it turned out that they, because I was a woman, they had me visit the orphanages and daycare centers and hospitals, and well, I was just shocked at what I saw. And then at subsequent visits that I've gone with Senator Rosenberg, we've started the Friends of Pskov and the Sisters of Pskov because I could not leave after what I saw and not be able to come back and help these.
Right. So these I know people are saying, well, what did she see?
Well, hospitals, and it's greatly improved as their economy has greatly improved. But for instance, there was one atomizer being used at a children's hospital, and all the kids had chicken pox, and they were sharing it. They had maybe a few aspirins. They had no medical supplies. They had no medical equipment. That has greatly changed as their economy has changed, which is that's for the good. But they still have the abandoned children's hospitals. And they still have big orphanages,
right? And you've also seen some of the kids who you saw in the orphanage, and there was I think some of them haven't even been adopted in the Boston area.
They have been in our own district here. However, the president of Russia stopped adoptions to the United States a couple of years ago. Unfortunately, maybe when relations get better between the two countries, that will.
So, is that work you plan to continue?
I would like to. It's a little iffy right now as far as would we get a visa or would they give a visa because we have some people on the no-fly list. I'm hoping that we can because when you do person-to-person visits and it's not government-to-government, it's a much easier way to connect with people and people understand that we're all the same.
Yeah. There are some issues that have just that are perennial here, and one of them is the school funding, Chapter 70 money. Do you ever see that changing?
We did in the Senate budget. We put in a study to an active study to look at the formula. To actually go back and take a look at the formula and see how it should and could change. In the meantime, I've put into statute, and hopefully it will survive conference, the money for the children who of the military who go to school and born. Because born is not paid by the federal government. They're not given the full amount that they need. And these children deserve the same education everybody else gets. So I've been putting the money in the budget every year, but now I put it into statute so that they will get it.
Mm-hmm. Do you see the other legislators voting for a change in formula? I mean, that's been the problem. And I know we've had legislators who say, one of the problems when you get up there is up to Boston is that everybody thinks everybody on the Cape is rich and there's no, we don't have any poverty here, which, of course, we know is not true.
Yeah. And that's why you need to get that information out. I think it's more right now as the charter school movement has grown. And resources, particularly on the Cape, in the Sandwich and other towns with a lot of kids going to Sturgis here. Some of the communities are feeling that they're not getting their fair share. That is not just here. That's across the board. So I think it'd be healthy to open it up and take a look at the formula and see how it can be better used.
If you have a question for President Therese Murray, 866-999-4626. We have her for another 7 or 8 minutes. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. What about the special education? There's these unfunded mandates that, in the school districts, from year to year, that what they're going to have to spend is really an unknown. And that's a real tough thing.
It depends on how many children. They don't know how many children are going to enter their sphere of influence and what the cost of educating those children. But when I talk about my sense of fairness, I really am very strongly believe that children should be included. In the classroom, they shouldn't be excluded and taught differently. Now, if you have different, severe physical or other issues that you need a one-on-one, that's different. But most kids, special needs kids, can be integrated into the classroom. And I know there's argument on the other side for the kids who are the brightest and the best that they're pulled back by this. But a lot of school systems work it out. And they call it the SPED circuit breaker, the special education circuit breaker. And we fully funded that this year in the budget. So, but it is the schools don't know. They don't know who's going to be moving into their area and what kids are going to come in with certain, you know, yeah. issues.
All right. Since I'm on it, I have to mention this one other thing. Since you're into fairness as well as I am, MCAS for a lot of these SPED kids. They do this portfolio, mm-hmm. which never, maybe one person's passed with this portfolio. And it's so much time on these poor teachers who are helping these kids put together these portfolios that really don't have a chance of ever passing. That seems like an area we should be looking at.
Well, we not should only be looking at that when they graduate, when they age out at age 22.
Another, yeah.
Every other kid in the Commonwealth, because they got their degree, they got their diploma, can audit state or, you know, state colleges, community colleges, universities. These kids can't. I just don't understand that. I just don't understand that. What would it cost to let these kids sit in a classroom and audit a class? Because they want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, there needs to be some changes there.
Okay. So looking at whoever your successor might be, both as Senate president and the next senator to represent the Plymouth and Barnstable District, what advice? Let's first have some advice for Senator Rosenberg.
Oh, he's my good friend, and we're meeting regularly, and I'm trying to bring him up to speed. I had no idea when I took over the Senate how many employees there are, because you have the clerk's office, the Senate counsel's office, the business office, the HR people, people you didn't even know worked for the Senate. You have the court offices. So for Stanley, I know he's going to hit the ground running. I've been meeting with him regularly to go over all of the different areas. And he's a process guy. Where I'm impatient, Stanley has lots of patience, and he's willing to sit and try to mediate things. So I think he's going to be a great Senate president, and I'm excited about him taking over.
All right. And then whoever's going to take your place as the state senator from Plymouth and Barnstable District, what advice do you give to – I guess it'll be him, because they're both men who are
They're
running.
Both men. The Plymouth part of the district is very different than the Cape part of the district. You have some very conservative areas and you have some very liberal areas, which we're sitting in right now. They don't meet very well. You have to really listen to both sides before you take a stand. And you really need to listen to the people that you represent, and you have to be available to the people you represent. And I have a high energy level, so I can be out from early to late. A lot of people can't, and I'm lucky that my daughter's older. So, but she wasn't when I started this, and you know, being away from home is tough.
Oh. And what about to any women out there who are thinking about running for office?
Run, run! It takes, you know, you have to have you can't have a thin skin. You have to run. You have to step up and take the, you know, slings and arrows. But it's what you're able to do and accomplish is worth standing up and making the run. And one thing we haven't touched on, which you know I'm passionate about, is mental health parity.
Absolutely, yeah. Go ahead, mention that. Yeah.
And I've spent a lot of time, 3 different bills, pushing mental health parity. We do that also in the substance abuse bill. We put a lot more resources into mental health services for people, too.
Access to mental health is so tough for so many people.
It really is.
Yeah. And again, another area where we could use some more practitioners. Shortage of mental health, you know, practitioners.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's why in the courts, instead of waiting for psychologists on these substance abuse cases, we are allowing trained social workers to make the decisions. They do the evaluations anyway, and then you have to wait for a psychologist. There's one for every so many courts, so they have to run around and could get there after the courts have closed, and this person is really in need of detox or treatment. So we've moved in and put social workers there to try to, again, give better access to treatment.
Yeah. We have about less than a minute. Anything else you want to say before we...
Well, I want to thank the people of the Plymouth-Barnstable District for electing me all these times and bringing me back. It's been a great, humbling experience to do this and a great challenge.
Yeah. And we know you'll be back because we've got a lot left to this session. So
yes,
and
then till January.
And I want you back when you write the book. That's going to be a great conversation. Senate President Therese Murray, as always, thanks so much for coming in and being with us this morning.
Great being here.
Up next, we talk with State Representative Cleon Turner. You're listening to The Point. Cleon Turner is a state representative for the 1st Barnesville District. He took office in 2005. He announced earlier this year that he will not seek re-election. We invited Representative Turner to take a look back on his tenure in the legislature, and he joins us in the studio this morning. Good morning. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
All right. So looking back, what do you think are the accomplishments that you're most proud of?
My accomplishments or the legislative accomplishments?
How about yours first, and then we'll talk about the legislature.
I think the particular thing that I'm most proud of is maintaining myself. You know, people tend to get in there no matter what their intentions are when they run for office, and then they get swayed into one direction or another. And I think I was pretty able to be myself for the whole time, which not necessarily pleased leadership.
All right. So what initiatives did you work on that you were able to accomplish that you know, you're
Well,
proud
I
of?
Started right out in my very first term. In fact, in about the second month of my first term, when I was running for election that term, my goal was to do some focus on regional school issues. And I was able to, in that very first term, create a regional school caucus that got legislators, both senators and state reps, together who had regional schools. And it was amazing to find out the number of people up there that didn't realize that regional schools are different than regular school districts.
I remember when you did that. I thought that was very, very creative because, of course, everyone tries to fight that, the whole funding, the way the schools are funded, and the Cape gets sort of this short rift, if you will.
They do.
And you've got other legislators, of course, representing their districts, and they don't want the money taken away from their school districts. So to approach this as, well, let's see, how many have regional school districts, and what can we do about that? I mean, that was very clever thinking.
It worked fairly well for a long time. It's still working somewhat. I'm afraid that unless somebody from a regional school district takes over that emphasis, there can be some significant shortfalls for regional schools in upcoming budgets.
Is there anybody that seems to be taking an interest in doing that?
Well, the unfortunate part is that leadership wasn't happy with the creation of the regional school caucus. So even though legislators with regional schools participated, and when it came to budget time and I focused on regional school transportation as a major budget item, they participated and signed on, but they didn't really get into it, shall we say. And the one senator, the Senate is better on this than the House. The House has 160 members. The Senate only has 4. So more of the senators have regional schools or rural areas in their districts. Even if they've got cities, they have some connection to regional schools. So the difficulty going forward is not only am I leaving, but Senator Brewer is leaving, and he is the person in the Senate on regional school issues, which works real well because he was the Senate chair of Ways and Means.
Right.
So a good example of this term is I had asked for in the budget, my priority was regional school transportation. So I asked for $6 million above what we got last year. And they gave us $2 million more, which is better than nothing at all. Well, you know, regional school transportation budget is supposed to be fully funded by the Commonwealth. There's a statute that says this. But we in the legislature, in our wisdom, find it possible to ignore statutes that we created. In any event, they're starting their budget, and he has put in the budget, the Senate side of the budget, fully funding of regional school transportation. So he's looking to fund it at $70 million, and I was looking to fund it at $62 million.
Wow. I've jotted that down. This is a question we're going to have when we get along to election time here. That's a question we may have to ask some of the folks running for office about that.
Yep.
So looking at the legislature as a whole, what are you most proud of as a body that you were able to do in your time?
I was pretty happy early on when we did the marriage equality legislation. We've done a lot of things on bullying and social issues that I think have been very good along the way. We've done some things with mental health, and actually we've done some things with education, though I complain about the lack of funding for regional schools as far as education goes and CAPE schools generally. You know, we spend about $7 billion a year on education. So that's a lot of money, mm-hmm. but you know, when you look at the Massachusetts Constitution, it says that the Commonwealth is supposed to provide the education for its students. Well, the Commonwealth only provides, on average, about 20% of that, wow. and local governments provide 80% of that. It should be reversed.
The other way around, right?
Yep.
So how has the legislature changed in your time since 2005 when you were the new state rep up there?
Well, there's the plus and the minus, I guess, here. to put it bluntly, I'd say the sad part is it hasn't changed much.
Still the same.
It's still the same. And unfortunately, as I said, when legislator or people run for the legislature and get elected up there, regardless of what their intentions are when they get there, they change fairly rapidly when they see the way it operates. So great example is I was talking to a legislator yesterday up there, a day before yesterday up there, and we were talking about the future of the legislature, and he, like me, has some issues with leadership, shall we say. So I said, well, going forward, you can change that. There's 159 of you and only one speaker. You can change that. And he said, no, we're not going to change that.
So what are the, since you're leaving, you can say, what are the issues you have with leadership?
Well, it's leadership tends to, right now, the House leadership I'm talking about, obviously, tends to have a view of what the public wants. And my response to that is you really need to ask the public. You can't make an assumption that the public doesn't want taxes, for example. So one of the things with Speaker DeLeo, which is somewhat irksome but very understandable, is as soon as he got elected as Speaker, he decided we were not going to raise any revenues while he is the Speaker. Well, we've moved money from here to there and from there to somewhere else and from somewhere else back to here, but we haven't really and we've increased funding for various things, mainly by decreasing funding somewhere else, that's not sustainable, in my opinion. So, I mean, that, you know, I come from a very conservative district, and I talk about revenues all the time. I talk about somewhat less, or what people would believe are things that irritate people or aren't big priorities with people, and I still get elected or reelected in that very conservative district as a Democrat. So It's because, in my opinion, I go out and talk to people and ask them what they want rather than assume that people just don't want to raise revenues.
Well, you also have a reputation for actually reading all those bills.
I do.
And I think people will be surprised how many don't actually read the they have staff who read and kind of tell them what's in it. But you actually have read every single bill you voted on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And a great example of that, and some people may have a big question on how did this happen? But yeah. A good example is the budget we just did had 1,175 amendments, and I read every one of those amendments and made notes on every one of them. And when we got to that oyster one,
right,
that doesn't mention oysters in it at all, it's actually from it was filed by a guy from the North Shore. His name and his district are listed, and then it's a very short particular sentence or two that doesn't even – it's only meets and bounds and survey lines. So one would assume by looking at the amendment, is what I did, looking at who filed it, where he's from, that it's relating to his district.
But no.
But no, and not only that, what I wrote right across it when I read it initially was non-budgetary. It shouldn't have gotten in any way, even if it mentioned everything.
And for folks who aren't familiar with, this was off of Mashpee, Pompanessa, I believe. He was trying to create some sort of a sanctuary that would...
Well, that's what this amendment did, but the alleged sanctuary would have been exactly the meets and bounds of a permitted oyster
farm.
Bed.
So how does that, you wonder how that stuff happens.
Well, it happens not often, believe it or not. It doesn't happen often there, but this was by a legislator who is leaving as well. And essentially what he did was this to everybody in there.
Yeah.
You know, he said, screw you guys. Mm. I'm going.
Has the region changed during your tenure?
Not really. I mean, there's been redistricting, so the districts have changed a bit. But the region itself, I don't see a lot of change here. I see a lot of emphasis on some things a little more than when I first got elected. For example, wastewater, when I first got elected, was on the radar screen, but it wasn't a big blip like it is now.
We've been talking about wastewater for at least a decade now. I know when we first started talking about it, I don't know that so many people are listening, but now everybody seems to be paying attention to that. And it's such a complex problem. And, of course, it all comes down to who's going to pay for what.
Yep. Yeah. And one of the things I'm hearing, and, you know, this is where reality strikes when you're a legislator, is some people here are saying, well, let's get money from the federal government and the state to help us out with that. Well, this isn't just a Cape Cod problem.
Right.
So when you're talking $8 billion for a Cape issue, you're talking about a similar amount for the Berkshires, which may be a bigger problem because it's so spread out. But getting money from the Commonwealth and the federal government may be possible, but it's not going to it's not going to pay the bill.
Exactly. All right. So what are some of the top issues in your district that your successor is going to be dealing with?
Education funding. Mm-hmm. My district is most of Brewster, all of Dennis, most of Yarmouth, and one precinct in Barnstable, which is Cumaquid and Barnstable Village. So regional schools are still the issue, and school funding, whether it be the single district Barnstable or the regionals of Nauset Regional and DY Regional. So school funding is always going to be a major issue for the Cape. Mm-hmm. The legislators and those powers that be in Boston really believe we're rich and can take care of ourselves down here, and we don't need to have their money. So that's going to be a big problem. Wastewater is going to be a big problem. Transportation is going to be a big problem.
And these are all issues we've been dealing with for a long, long time.
Forever.
Yeah. Yep. Housing is another one. Yeah. Yep. So what's next for you?
Relax. R&R. R&R. My wife is retiring at the same time. Unfortunately, she's retiring a couple of months before me, so that gives her 2 months to do a list.
The honey-do list, right?
The honey-do list. But we're going to enjoy each other and Cape Cod for a while, and we'll do some traveling. We both like to travel around the U.S. We've been places all over the world, so now we want to do the U.S.
Yeah. Anything you're going to do, you know, any kind of, you thinking of, I know, weren't you town moderator at one time or something?
No, I was on the Board of Selectmen.
Board of Selectmen.
Dennis for 9 years. I was on the Board of Assessors for 20 years.
So none of that. You're going to relax now.
No, I'm not going to do that.
You know, one of the other issues that is we've been talking about for a long, long time is the whole homeowner's insurance issue.
Exactly.
And there's another one that it seems like we just cannot crack that nut for some reason.
Yeah, well, it's gotten worse because it's not only the homeowner's insurance based on wind velocity zones and those hurricane modelings, but now to add fuel to that fire, we have new flood maps that have created and new policy requirements that have increased or threatened to increase the cost of flood insurance dramatically. So not only do we have a in my mind, bogus look at what our hurricane models are, but now we've got to deal with flood as well.
Right. It, you know, when you think of all these, you know, the insurance, whether it's the flood or the homeowner's insurance, the wastewater, the all these issues that all have dollar figures on them, and you look at our demographics, we have a lot of retired people. And, you know, as you say, everybody thinks we're all, you know, rich and living in McMansions down here, and so not the case. We have
so
a lot of people struggling and a lot of people living on fixed incomes. Yep. So it's tough. In some ways, there's tough times ahead for a lot of us.
Well, one of my refrains in the State House, which is very accurate as I look at it, is that it's all about the money. You know, we get up there, we talk about education and the kids, and we talk about seniors, and we talk about folks with mental issues and all of that, but it really breaks down. It's all about the money, and that's where it is here on the Cape. But as you said, we've got a lot of retired people who don't have the money. So when I talk about raising revenues, I talk about looking at it in various ways that will help local communities especially. Good example is Sarah Peake and I have both been on to expanding the room tax to include vacation rentals, which is already done, by the way, in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, New York, and Connecticut surrounding us, not to mention those other states like California, Florida, you know, Arizona. All of those places do it, and they do it pretty well. But, I mean, there's a great way to raise revenues for Cape communities that doesn't dig into the pocketbooks of those, excuse me, retired people who have relatively fixed incomes.
What's been the pushback on that?
Well, the pushback is twofold. The big pushback is because I think we have convinced some of leadership that this does make sense. But Speaker DeLeo is someone who sticks to his word. He is a person who is very straightforward on when he says something, it's the way it's going to be. And that's a good trait in him. And he said the very first day he was elected Speaker, we're not going to raise revenues. Mm-hmm. And that's raising revenues. And the only exception he has made to that rule since he has been the speaker is we did an increase in the gas tax. Mm-hmm. That's it. We haven't raised revenues in any other manner since he's been the speaker.
Yeah. So you're in favor of term limits with leadership?
Yes, and we have term limits. He has one more term. It's four terms for Speaker. It's four terms for President of the Senate, and that's the issue with President Murray now finishing her last of those four terms. And the Speaker DeLeo can actually have another term should he get reelected, and chances are he will.
We'll see what happens. All right, so words of wisdom for whoever takes over your seat.
Be prepared to fight the fight on we are not all rich on Cape Cod, because they really believe that up there. And, you know, if it's a Republican, which there's a good chance it could be, then that person is, in my opinion, going to have a tougher row to hoe, because he or she, well, there's only one Republican running and it's a he would have, he's a Republican, and there are a minority of Republicans up there, and they tend to be less able to work with leadership on things that, you know, really need to get done. But then again, my relationship with leadership, one could argue, was a hindrance for me.
You've had the same problem. I suppose one of I'm always looking for the silver lining. So on the silver lining part for Republicans, they are by far the minority, but they usually do get to sit on the committees they want to be on.
Well, that's because everybody's on committees, and we Democrats, because there are so many of us, we get three committees. Actually, the last two terms, I've been on four committees, both of the last two terms. But Republicans get on six or seven committees, and it's pretty much the ones they want. Because the Republican leader makes those appointments. It's not the Speaker.
Yeah. State Representative Cleon Turner, enjoy retirement.
Thank you. I'm going to try my best to do that.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vins produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.